All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 411 Ground and Pound MMA podcast. We are your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. My name is Robert Winfrey, and I am your host, per usual. Thank you all very much for listening. I always appreciate you guys. Still dealing with a little bit of the fallout from UFC 300. There was no event, so there's no review this week, only a preview of this week's event, so there's all that on the schedule. And you know what? Again, just wanted to take a minute. Appreciate you guys. Means a lot to me that anyone listens at all, much less, I don't have the world's biggest audience. I don't pretend that I do, but it always feels a little bit bigger than I expect every time I check. So, thank you all very much for that. Again, it means a lot. I've already mentioned a little bit on the agenda. We're previewing UFC on ESPN 55. We're back in the warehouse again. Hooray! Jokes aside, there's a couple of fights here that don't suck. And I'll take that these days, especially for warehouse fights. And the UFC will be on ESPN proper, so UFC on ESPN 55 could be something there. So we'll give a preview of that, and then I haven't been able to find any interesting news. Let me tell you the news very briefly. The UFC tried to do a victory lap related to UFC 300 and tried to call out everyone who was down on the card before it aired. And most people, I think, were kind of like me, which was, you overhyped it. That's true. It's still very good on paper. And instead, so naturally, they found a bunch of, like, either very small or almost completely anonymous people on, like, YouTube and Reddit and whatnot. For their pseudo victory lap, because for some reason, this company, despite being a multi-billion dollar valued company and one that generates a metric ton of revenue and is something like 200 million in profit a year, probably more than that at this point. That's from a couple of years ago, or at least last year. They still got this giant chip on their shoulder, and Dana White is a petty, petty man. But like, I don't care about that. I mean, I mentioned it here, like, to tell you how weak the news was. Like, I don't care about bizarre drama between, or pre-fight stuff between Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal before their boxing match. Like, there's just it's a lot of nothing. It's a lot of people still getting talking points out of 300. It's Max Holloway and Ilia Topuria starting to chirp at each other a little bit, which, don't get me wrong. Thumbs up, cool. But I don't care about enough to talk about in any kind of detail. So it does kind of leave, again, a lot, not a lot there. So we'll check Twitter as always, but at the moment I think we're just kind of previewing this UFC card, which is, again, not exactly setting the world on fire. We went through a gulf to get to UFC 300, and we are back in the doldrums, baby. Okay, that's a little harsh. Again, this card is not especially great. UFC 301, it's getting hate because the main event feels very out of left field. And let's be honest here, it's not the strongest pay-per-view card the UFC's ever put forward. However, I've been around long enough to know it's not their weakest. So, at least there's that. Anyway, that's kind of where we are with all of that stuff, so interact with the product a little bit, please. Like, comment, subscribe, star rating, written review. Y'all know the drill by now. I don't have to go through it too much. All right. Let's jump into this card, shall we? UFC on ESPN 55. Or UFC Vegas 91, which is how it's going to be, like, hashtagged or whatnot for marketing purposes. I don't know why. I don't know why they went with that. As like they're in Vegas so much that I don't know the merits of this versus saying, "Hey, we're on ESPN again." I don't know. Maybe they get some kind of extra money from from the Nevada government for that. It is somewhat the height of irony that, look, man, I'm on record here. Like, I'm not a big government guy. So I appreciate this general sentiment when Dana White is like, you don't really want anything from the government, which is only partially true. But when your organization is then taking, money from different states to run events there. Like, do you see the double standard a little bit there? Now, I'm sure his counterpoint to that would be, we're being paid for a service, and I'm talking about you don't want anything for him. Yeah, I'm not saying there's not a degree of nuance there, but in the broad strokes, weird look. But I don't know. They've chosen to do the city thing as a general rule, so yeah, whatever the reason. And again, on paper, this is not. I'm once again not calling this the worst thing I've ever seen. It's not the worst fight night I've ever seen. It's just not. I understand people not being enthused by it. I do understand that. But I think it'd be a little bit unfair to just say, again, it's the worst. Let's say we're back in kind of the doldrums or a slump. Yeah. I don't think that's unfair. It's very much a comedown card after 300 and before 301. So that's just kind of what it is. But your main event at flyweight for, I can't say the presumptive title shot because flyweight's a little bit wonky at the moment. Again, you have Pantoja, who's going to be fighting, not this, like in 2 weeks. Pantoja's fighting the number, what, 10 guy in Steve Ercig, who I like Steve Ercig. There's some really good stuff to his game. I'm not out here to clown that guy at all. He's good. You just had Royval and Moreno fight. Amir Albazi still looking for a fight. And, Menel Kopp can't seem to get a fight that actually holds together for love or money. And in this one, we've got number 5, Matthews Nicolau, and number 8, Alex Perez. Good fight, but it's so weird because Royval and Pantoja as a rematch is something you can sell. Their first fight was certainly have it certainly went Pantoja's way, I think 4 rounds to 1. But Pantoja had Royval had moments there, and Royval's still very good, and beating Brandon Moreno certainly gets you something. So it's not really if one of these guys pulls out something truly spectacular, they might leapfrog, but I got a hard time believing that. So whoever wins here is probably still going to have one more fight against Amir Albazi or Kai Kara-France or maybe Brandon Moreno. Like, you still got one more fight, especially if you're Alex Perez. There's some ground to make up there. So we're not really going for the presumptive number one contendership. I think Royval still has that. All of which is, and by the way, that whole thing could be utterly upended if Ursa upsets Pantoja. Which, spoiler for next week, not my prediction, but Ursa's good. And I think if you discount his chances, you're doing yourself a disservice. I still prefer Pantoja's chances. But I think Ursa has a better shot than a lot of people are going to give him because of the circumstances surrounding how everything came together. And in general, Ursa having not exactly fought, I don't think it's unfair to say that his level of competition has not been nearly as steep as, a Brandon Royval or a Brandon Moreno. And that's going to get him, again, a little bit overlooked. And I don't mind picking Pantoja, but I'm not going to dismiss Ursig. But anyway, the point there is like, you're fighting for position here, but we're not getting the next title challenger out of this one in all likelihood. But as for the fight itself, it's a good fight. Nicolau is pretty darn good. Perez has been around for a while, and the wear's starting to show. He's 32, and at flyweight, that can be a bit. Here's the thing. He had a title shot back in 2020, lost to Davison Figueiredo. He got guillotine choked in the first round. Did okay until he got caught in the choke. His only losses, he only had one loss in the UFC for a long time. It was Joseph Benavidez. Again, got all the way to a title shot. Stopped Jussie Formiga with leg kicks. But after he lost to Figueiredo, he then fought Alexandre Pantoja, 18 months later, not quite 2 years, a little over a year and a half, and got choked out by Pantoja with a rear naked choke slash neck crank. Then he's off for another almost 2 years, comes back and fights Muhammad Makhayev, loses a unanimous decision that, honestly, I thought you could have gone his way. He did a lot of good work. And if that had been five rounds, that was a better fight. By the way, that was such a better fight for five rounds than the main event of that card, which was Rozenstruik and Gazeev. If that had been five rounds, I think Perez would have had him. He was having some trouble there. I didn't hate Makhayev getting the win, but Perez definitely. He's on a three-fight losing streak, but it's in a title fight, current champion, next big thing that in a fight he did well in, and under different circumstances, I think could have got that. So it's a little bit deceiving, the skid that he's on. It's really been the activity that's kind of hurt him. Missed all of 21, missed half of 22, all of 23, a good chunk of, and then fought back in March of this year. So fast turnaround this time, but his inactivity has been kind of an issue. So there's that. And in the other side, we've got Matthews Nicolau, 31, coming off of his first loss in the UFC since 2018. His overall UFC record is quite good. It's what, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 2. That's a solid record. His only losses are to Dustin Ortiz and then Brandon Royval. He's coming off the Royval loss. That was April of last year, and he got knocked out there, so don't mind him taking a little bit more time to recover. He was supposed to fight Menel Kopp in January of this year before Kopp weighed in at 129 pounds, 129 and a half, actually. So that got canceled. They rescheduled it for April. That fell apart again because something with Kopp. And now we got this. My hunch is Nicolau. He's generally on the better trajectory. He's been more active. He's just kind of, again, things are kind of just generally going his way. Five rounds is kind of a big deal, though, and I think we've seen Perez do some longer fights than we have Nicolau. Let me double check that. I don't want to talk out of my. So Perez gone 5 once earlier in his career. He hasn't been scheduled for five. That's funny, actually. Only the once. Like, if you're not fighting for the belt at flyweight, you're not getting 5 rounds because that has to be a main event. I know these guys are the main event here, but we also know kind of how the UFC feels about flyweight main events for some reason. I assume there's some kind of size prejudice going on. Not entirely sure who to blame most for that, but definitely feels like that's what's up there. And Nicolau. I don't think he's ever gone five. Has he even been scheduled for five? I'm not sure. Huh. Odd as that is, this might be his. I'm going to call this his first five-round fight. It's certainly his first UFC main event, so we'll go with that. So that opens up a bit of a question. Nicolau's had some vulnerabilities defensively. But Perez, not the biggest finishing threat. I mean, he's got hard leg kicks, and I don't mean to say that he has no finishing threat. But against the level of opposition that Nicolau represents, he's not generally had a lot of success. Who has he stopped? Hang on. First UFC fight, Anaconda choke. Stopped Jose Torres, got stopped, decision. Choke, leg kicks, and then the losses. So, okay. Again, not a complete lack of threat there. I certainly don't mean to imply that. Nicolau, somewhat, a little bit more decision heavy. Certainly, I mean, guy debuted with a Japanese necktie, which was nice, but split decision with John Moraga, decision with Luis Smolka, another Japanese necktie in his. Oh, he got cut. Right. He was one of those guys that they cut at when the UFC was like, hey, we're gonna just get rid of flyweight, and then they changed their mind and brought him back, and he had that split decision over Manel Kopp. Yeah, he knocked out Matt Schnell, but that was his first stoppage in the UFC since his UFC debut. So, and a little bit also the same, like, and not much of a finish threat there from Nicolau. Again, my hunch is to go Nicolau. I think it's a good fight. I think it's generally well matched. What are the odds on this one, just out of curiosity? Yeah, not quite. -170-ish for Nicolau. I think that's about right, in all honesty. So we'll go with Nicolau there. Your co-main event in the why, oh Lord, why, light heavyweight fight of the evening. We have Ryan Spann and Bogdan Guskov. I don't know what to say about this. Guskov, what, 1-1 in the UFC? Let me double check that. He might be 2-1. He's at least 1-1. Yeah, 1-1. Lost to Volkan Oezdemir, then beat Zach Pounga. I don't know what to think about this one. He's fighting Ryan Spann, and if there is a Ryan Spann is one of the most inconsistent guys because he came into the UFC, won several fights in a row, some of them weird because it's light heavyweight, so went to a split decision with Sam Alvey in 2020. But had a good run and then got starched in the first round by Johnny Walker. Rebounded okay by beating Misha Cirkunov, then had almost nothing for Anthony Smith. Won a couple of fights, including a really good win over Dominic Reyes, but it turns out Dominic Reyes way, way washed. Well, ways, I shouldn't say washed, but something in him is short-circuited. Like, that damage has really caught up with him in a hurry. And then rematched Anthony Smith and dropped a split decision. I think I was fine with split there. Oh, he lost to Nikita Krylov as well. He got triangle choked by him. This is a guy that's, again, very, very up and down. And Guskov, I don't have a great feel for in general. Bit of a slugger. Likes to just kind of get in there and swing, but not much for defense. Spann has good power. But Spann's a little bit, again, kind of flaky, and he's been hit and hurt plenty in the past. Even in some fights he won, he got, like, you could see he was not doing all that great and got hurt. There's a degree of refinement in some of the punching of Spann that Guskov does not have. And Guskov's been a little chinny. Look, he got a good enough win beating Zach Pounga, but is Spann ranked? He has been in the past. He might still be because this division is a wasteland. Yeah, Ryan Spann is still ranked. He's number 11 on a 2-fight losing streak. Light heavyweight, everybody. This. Oh, I'm torn. See, the odds, I just looked. The odds are with Span. About 2-1. He's about -200. I think that's a little generous to Ryan Span. He's a little chinny. He's fought the better opposition, to be sure. But man, I would not feel comfortable giving any like giving Span that much of a cushion odds wise. That dude is just like made to let you down as a book as like a bookie. One way or the other. Am I gonna go? Well, ultimately, am I gonna go with Guskov or not? I'm gonna pick Span. How old is Ryan Span? 32. I mean, it's light heavyweight, so that's hardly. You know, that's not old at all for that weight class. Guskov is 31, so guys, they're about the same age. I'm gonna go with Span, but there's a decent chance this winds up being like the last time I pick him to win. If he gets iced by Guskov, that's a real bad look for him. That might be. Man, that's real bad. All right, women's flyweight next. Ariane Lipski and Karine Silva. Once again, Silva, I think, is someone that they're looking at very positively. She's on a three-fight winning streak in the UFC on a fairly long one overall, dating back to 2019. Hang on, that's one, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Yeah, eight-fight winning streak, three of those in the UFC. That is nothing to sneeze at. All of her UFC wins have been first-round finishes. They've all been submissions. One Darce choke, one knee bar, one guillotine choke. Like, this woman knows what she's doing. I'm certainly not here to downplay Ariane Lipski, who's really kind of started turning a corner. She got beat by Priscilla Cachuea, and losing to Priscilla Cachuea is embarrassing. But she's won three in a row since. The Gatto win was split and a little dicey, but got a pretty solid armbar win over Casey O'Neill her last time out. I did not expect her to beat JJ Aldrich, to be candid. And so she's kind of turning a little bit of a corner, but I've been decently impressed with Karine Silva, so I'm going with Silva here. Oh, geez, she's another favorite. Oh, I don't like picking nothing but favorites. It really makes me feel uncomfortable. But I'm not doing that because she's the favorite. Like that's because that's where my analysis lands. If I was gonna pick an underdog thus far, it would have been Guskov. Heavyweights, because we're still in the YOY phase here. We have Austin Lane, who I believe has yet to win in the UFC. Yeah. No contest with Justin Toffa, eye pokes. Then they rebooked the fight with Toffa, and Toffa knocked him out in 88 seconds. Yeah, he's fighting Janata Diniz. I don't know how to pronounce this gentleman's last name. He's from Brazil. I don't know how to pronounce this guy's first name, so I apologize. I know I'm going to be butchering this. It's Denise. Sorry, man. I know I'm doing a bad job there. But he is 6-0 as an MMA fighter. Has a pretty decent kickboxing and Muay Thai career at his back. It's another one of those guys making the transition from kickboxing to MMA. This guy fought in Glory a few times. So not again, nothing to sneeze at in that respect. Feels a little bit like not. I don't mean to say a gimme. I don't think Austin Lane's a gimme, but I don't think Austin Lane is a UFC caliber fighter. And I think he's going to be a bit inclined to fight Deniz on the terms that favor Deniz. So, you can follow some of my logic there. Going with Denise. Yeah, I feel okay on that pick. Let's see. Next up at welterweight, decent fight here. If you have another one, like main event's pretty solid. If you want another one to circle, Tim Means and Uros Medic. This is a pretty good fight. I have a lot of respect for Tim Means. The man's 40. He's got, what, 50 fights? He had a tough fight with Andre Fiallo last time out, but gutted through it, got a late stoppage. He lost three in a row before that. That was tough. He could have won the Max Griffin fight. That was split. You could have gone his way. But Kevin Holland beat him pretty easily is the wrong word, but decisively. Sort of ditto Alex Morono. But again, a lot of respect for Tim Means, veteran. Always in a watchable fight, if nothing else. His chin's just a little. But his heart and his determination are top-notch. He's good in the pocket, good in the clinch. Again, he's good. And then on the other side, we have Medic. He's been a bit up and down in the UFC. Good win in his debut. He actually upset Alon Cruz, who was coming off the Contender Series, and they kind of wanted to be something. Then loses to Jalen Turner. Bounces back a couple of wins. Had a really good. His fight with Matthew Semelsberger from UFC 291 was a lot of fun. And on a different card, would have probably scored some kind of bonus. But, you know, UFC 291. You were struggling to come up with some performance bonuses there. There were some guys that I would have given a bonus to even ahead of that. And again, I liked what he did, but when Roman Kopylov couldn't get a bonus for head kicking Claudio Hiberio, that was a tough one. I mean, again, that card was headlined by Gaethje and Poirier too. I mean, that was a really good card. But after that, he lost to Miktibek Orhobai, which I think a lot of us kind of saw coming. This one, though, my hunch is to lean Medic. I expect we'll get a decent brawl here. And I am certainly not trying to discount Tim Means. I think very high. Wow. I think a lot better of Tim Means than these odds do. We're looking at Medic as like a 3-to-1 favorite. I'm picking Medic, don't get me wrong. But +250 on Tim Means. Again, that's asking for some trouble there. As a minor aside, that's asking for a little bit of trouble. Medic has had cardio issues in the past, and if he doesn't get Means out of there, Means could grind him down and finish him late. That's kind of what Tim Means does. On the prelims, we have good fight here, actually. Ronny Yahya and Victor Henry. I love Means. I respect the heck out of Ronny Yahya. Man's almost 40 at bantamweight, still kicking. Yahya, decorated jiu-jitsu practitioner. Unfortunately for him, he's had some cardio issues that have been kind of a problem. And he's really one-dimensional in that if he can't get his grappling going, he comes from kind of the Damian Maia school of, I'm a better grappler, so I don't mind pulling guard and then working sweeps and all that kind of stuff. His last time out, he got knocked out by Montel Jackson. That was April of last year. So been out, it'll be a little over a year when he comes back. But prior to that, had a two-fight winning streak. Ray Rodriguez and then Kyung Ho Kong. Had a draw before that, lost to Ricky Simon, then three-fight winning streak before that. Like, just respect to Ronny Yahya, man. One of the WEC guys who just still out here doing the darn thing, right? Victor Henry coming off of that no contest with Javed Basharat. I think pretty highly of Victor Henry. This is a fairly tough fight for him. Because Ronny Yahya is, again, very good. And Victor Henry is not exactly a spring chicken. He's 36. But Henry, I like his chances here. Again, I respect the heck out of Yahya, but I think Father Time is catching up with him a little bit. So going with Going with Victor Henry there, but another one I wouldn't mind circling. That's that. I if you're weird like me, Ronnie Yaga has some fun stuff to watch. See, next up, lightweight Austin Hubbard and Michael Figlak. Austin Hubbard fought his way back into the UFC pretty recently. Lost in a tough finale to Kurt Hollabaugh. Really unfortunately that it was kind of unfortunate when he got cut. Dude was like trading wins and losses his entire first UFC run. Lost to Davi Hamosh, beat Kyle Prepelec, lost to Mark Madsen, beat Max Roshkoff, lost to Joe Selecki, beat Dakota Bush, lost to Vince Pichel, and got the axe. Won twice outside of it. Like, there's a lot interesting in the game of Austin Thud Hubbard. He's really good about defensive takedowns against the fence. Good pressure, and got some thump to him. Again, there's a lot there that I think is certainly worthy of note. Whereas Figlak is coming out of Poland, 8-1. Lost his UFC debut to Ferdis Ziom. That's Ziom's not bad. I don't mean to say that that's some kind of big negative. The odds like Figlak, not a whole lot. I don't think I've picked an underdog yet. I'm going to here. I kind of like Hubbard's chances. I thought he was going to win that season of Tough and then kind of got swallowed in some jiu-jitsu play. But I'm going to go with Austin Hubbard there. See, next up we have heavyweights. Oh, why? There's two heavyweight fights on this card. Dontayle Mays and Caio Machado. Mays, boy, has that man been up and down. Most recently had a no contest with Hamdi Abdelwahab. He lost that fight, did Mays, and then there was a drug test issue for Hamdi. He then lost to Augusto Sakai. He beat Andrei Arlovski, which I didn't expect, but he did it. And then promptly lost to Rodrigo Nascimento in a terrible fight. That fight really sucked. It's so bad I remember it. Kyle Machado had a pretty solid. Machado, I think, had a good UFC debut. He's 8-2-1. No, he lost his UFC debut. Oh, right. He fought Mick Parkin. Oi. Oi. What a. That was not a great fight either. Mick Parkin, not an entertaining fighter thus far in the UFC. You know, I'm just not going to pick Dontayle Mays. I might be wrong about this one. It's crappy heavyweight, so, you know, there's the potential for a lot of swings there, but I can't pick Mays, not really. Not until he demonstrates a degree of consistency that he has not thus far. Women's strawweight, we have Marek Mann and Ketlyn Souza. Ketlyn Souza doo-doo, lost her UFC debut to Karine Silva. Mann, somewhat by contrast. Excuse me, Marnik. Smaller font, if I missed that. 6-2, also I think lost her UFC debut. Yeah, against Josephine Knutson. Slightly tough one to pick here. Let me look at some stats. Mann is what? 5 feet tall, 64 inches of reach, and Souza is 5'3". So, in fairness, I mean, both these ladies lost their UFC debuts. I think Souza probably looked a little better in hers, for whatever that's worth. That's not a lot to go on. Yeah, let me go with Sosa. I vaguely remember her debut a little bit better than I do Mann's. And Mann is one of those women who might be really wishing for an atom weight class. I mean, isn't this a strong weight? Yeah, she's probably one who would really benefit from fighting at 105 instead of 115. Lightweight's next. We have Gabe Green and James Double L. Where is this gentleman from? That will give me a hint as to how to pronounce that. Where are you? Did you get moved? Wait, did this fall apart? This is listed as having fallen apart on Tapology. Which they're usually more up to date than others. Where is Peru? So double L's would be a ya or a ja, depending on your accent. So Jontop or Yontop. He's 14-2. His nickname is Goku. Like, not that I don't appreciate the balls on that as your nickname, but that's a big thing. It's a big thing to call yourself that. He's on a good winning streak, though, so fair play to him. I think I would have favored Green. That's a real close one, though. So that seems to have fallen apart. Let me list my pick just on the off chance. And I think it will be Green, but that's more for my own randomness as far as bookkeeping in case something comes up there. Boy, Green cut. Ooh. Wait, Green dropping down? Or is this still welterweight? Yeah, Green dropping to lightweight. Okay, his size, I might like him there. Let's see, women's flyweight, Ivana Petrovic, or Petrovic, and Na Leong. Or Leong, I want to say Na Leong because, yeah, Na's the family name, and that's usually listed that way. What do we got here? So Petrovic is 6-1 and fights out of Croatia? Yes, that is the Croatian flag. Okay. 6-1 again. I think lost her UFC debut to Luana Carolina. Luana Carolina is not really great. But then again, Na, 19-7, but currently on a 3-fight losing streak, all of them in the UFC. Wasn't she part of like the first? Yeah. Her UFC debut was like the first card back in front of fans, wasn't it? UFC 261? Or am I wildly misremembering that? I'm pretty sure it was, because that was like a bonkers fight between those two for as long as it lasted. First fight back for the UFC with fans in attendance, and they just went at it. After that, she lost to Silvana Gomez Juarez, and then lost to JJ Aldridge. So she's not had the easiest level of opposition, but she's also been, not all that sterling in her performance. I think this is Petrovic. Yeah, I'm gonna go with Petrovic. But we're also, again, we're dealing with some kind of unknown variables there. Then at lightweight, we have Gabriel Benitez and Mahashate Hayasir. I think he just goes by Mahashate. So I like Gabriel Benitez, Mowgli. But with respect, he's 35. He's not the oldest guy in the world, but he's also got like 34 fights. And he's been in the UFC for a decade, or he will be in there for 10 years in November. His UFC debut was November of 2014. How much time did this guy miss? And, well, I don't know. That's actually respectable. Hang on. So he fought once in 14, twice in 15, once in 16, twice in 17, once in 18, once in 19, twice in 20, once in 21, once in twice in 22. Missed all of 23. Okay. That's kind of the thing there. And then lost to Jim Miller in January of this year. So he's kept a decent schedule. But there's been a couple of points when, okay, he's missed chunks of time is kind of the upshot of this. So if we go back through some of this again, November of 14 and then June of 15 and November of 15. Doesn't fight again until September of 16, so not a full year, but 10-ish months. Doesn't fight then May of 17 rather, excuse me. That's decent. December of 17, also decent. Doesn't fight after that until, sorry, then May of 18, still okay. Doesn't fight again until August, excuse me, of 19, so over a year. May of 2020, and then December of 2020, and then July of 21. Then not after that until February of 22, then August of 22, then again January of 24. So there's a few different points when he's lost big chunks of time. And it's kind of kept him around, but never feels like that guy's been treading water for basically his entire career. Wins a couple of fights in his debut, loses to Andre Feely. Then wins, loses, wins, wins, loses, loses, wins, loses, loses, wins and loses. What's Mahashate been up to? 9-3. I think he's been a little up and down. 1-2 in the UFC. Got a win in his debut, then lost to Rafa Garcia and missed weight, then lost to Vyacheslav Borisov. Again, good old Slava Claus there. He had moments in that fight. I think he actually had a good first round and then just couldn't quite sustain it. I think this is Mahashate. Benitez is a little bit worn at this point. And again, respect to him. Guy's been doing it for a long time. You spend 10 years in the UFC, you're gonna kind of get worn down. It's just the reality of it. And yeah, I'm gonna go with Mahashate here. Oh, Mahashate. Sure I'm spelling this right. Mahashate. Okay. Okay, Mahashate. I can never remember how to spell that guy's name right the first time. One of those I just always have to double check. And I think the last one we have listed here, Jonathan Pierce and David Onama. We lost a fight that I was actually looking forward to. We were supposed to get Joel Alvarez and Mateusz Rembeski. Unfortunately, Alvarez had to pull out, and now Rembeski is now facing Carlos Diego Fajeda at May 11th at the St. Louis card that is still, for some unknowable reason, headlined by Derek Lewis and Rodrigo Nascimento. Please don't do that to the people of St. Louis. I'm not exactly a big fan of the state of Missouri in general, but they don't deserve that. I don't know, maybe they do. But anyway, Jonathan Pierce and David Onama. I'm moderately still on the Jonathan Pierce. I'm not like on the full-on hype train, but he had a good run going at featherweight and then got caught in a ninja choke against Joe Anderson Brito. He was winning that fight, by the way. Wait, was that the one or was that on the same card where there were like two ninja chokes and one of them was, no, it was this one where Pierce was just kind of holding him down and Brito was kind of complaining about being held down and got kind of told by, I think Pierce actually told him, like, well, if you don't like it, do something about it. So he wall walked and the ninja choked him. It was hilarious. But Pierce is still pretty darn good. Onama, I feel like this is a replacement. I want to double check that. Where did this one fall out as well? No, I think it's still listed here. I just gotta find it. Yeah, there it is. Onama, 11-2. Wasn't he the first Ugandan to make his way to the UFC? I think he was. 3-2 in the UFC, a little up and down. Lost his debut, then beat Gabriel Benitez, beat Garrett Armfield, lost to Nate Landwehr. Coming off a win over Gabriel Santos. That's certainly nothing to sneeze at. But this is a tough matchup for him stylistically. I still think pretty darn highly of Jonathan Pierce, the Brito loss notwithstanding. So I think that's where we're going here. That's not to sell Onama short. He's got power. He's a pretty good athlete. But Pierce is just like, that guy gets a hold of you, and getting away from him is incredibly difficult. He will just drain the life out of you with just relentless grappling. And I'm certainly not saying Onama can't win this, because he can. But I think I'm going with Pierce, so. And yeah, that's where we are on that one. So it's once again, I'm not saying it's bad, not by any stretch of the imagination. But it is very gear turny, right? It's just another turn of the machinery. But I'll be covering that Saturday, MMAZone411mania.com. Y'all know where to find me. We'll go through all of that, so that should be a good time. Okay, again, I don't have anything listed here for news because it's been very slow in the news. I'm going to check Twitter and see if I will, if there's anything MMA related that's been. Look, I could talk a little bit about boxing if you'd like, because Ryan Garcia upsetting Devin Haney was kind of hilarious. It's even more so in hindsight. I mean, Garcia did miss weight. Fun fact, by the way. So, Ryan Garcia misses weight by like 3 pounds and change, which is a decent deal in boxing. That's a little over halfway to the next weight class where they are. And the fine for that, per usual, is like 20% of your purse. Well, for Devin Haney, that was an extra like $1.5 million. I forget the exact number. That is the fine that Garcia had to pay to Devin Haney is more than like the might be more than this card is paid when it's all said and done, or very close to it. Like Devin Haney's, again, Garcia's fine could almost cover the entire budget for certainly the undercard and change of a UFC card. That is sad. That is just sad on so many levels. But again, I don't mind talking bigger boxing fights, but I don't feel like talking about that one a whole lot. So let me check Twitter, see if anything crazy's happened. If not, we'll do plugs and get out of here. Nope, nothing new, so I guess it's into plugs. Again, short episode this week, but after last week, that took a while, so we'll take a short one this week, yeah? All right, Monday evening, Damn You Hollywood, myself, Mark Radulich, I think Alexis and Dorian will be reviewing Abigail, which we're all kind of excited about. This is from the same director of Ready or Not and Scream 6, and while I was meh on Scream 6, I really liked Ready or Not, so curious to see how this one plays out. Looks like a lot of fun, especially if you're into the horror side of things and a gory good time. And that's more or less right up my alley. So tune in for that. I don't think I have anything else. No, I'm not on the Fallout TV party, but tune in for that if you are interested in Fallout. Last week we talked Civil War, and that was a discussion. Weird movie. Weird movie. More weirdly marketed, created some real cognitive dissonance there with expectations versus reality. So there's that. But yeah, Abigail this week. Week after that will be the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which I'm very much looking forward to. What else do I got this week? My regular spate of coverage, I guess. WWE SmackDown on Friday, UFC event on Saturday, and then back here next week to review this card and preview. Double check my schedule there. May 4th. Yes, we will preview UFC 301 Alexandre Pantoja versus Steve Ercek in your main event. Jose Aldo returns, fights Jonathan Martinez. Okay, that's kind of it. Well, Michelle Pereira is probably going to run over Iho Portieri, and that'll be something. Anything else? Don't care about Bahalio running over Paul Craig. Drew Anderson Brito. Yeah, and I got kind of a soft spot for that guy. Mictibek Orlbay is back in action. Vince Pichel's on the free. Dude, Ismael Bonfim has fallen pretty hard. Fighting Vince Pichel on the prelims. A lot of people have been saying it. This is not an especially strong pay-per-view card. I don't disagree. Not the worst UFC pay-per-view card. A lot of you guys are saying that you got real short memories or you've only been here for a minute. I've been here for a while. So believe me when I tell you want to go back through the list, there's some doozies back there. All right? This one, I am not here to say it's the best thing you'll ever see on pay-per-view. I'm really not. Fact, it's probably the weakest card the UFC's put out this year so far. On paper. On paper, big caveat there, on paper. But not the weakest event the UFC has ever put out on paper, and I'm not even talking about going all the way back to like the Dark Ages. I mean, they headlined a card with like, oh, what was the Roy Nelson one? Hang on, now I gotta look this up. Because I have to be. That event was so hilariously like quasi mismanaged. Was it Dan Henderson that main evented? Let me double check. I'll find it. Is it 139? I don't think it was 139. No, it wasn't 139. Oh, what was it? I want to say it was 70 something. Because Roy Nelson was on the main card. Let me double check this. Hang on, I will find this because now it amuses me. Found it. Found it. UFC 161. In Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Headlined by Rashad Evans and Dan Henderson, co-main event of Roy Nelson and Stipe Miocic. Oh, that was. Man, I forgot how bad UFC 130 was as well. That was headlined by Rampage and Mark Hamill. Back in 2011. So again, I'm going a little bit in my way back. That's not the way back machine, but I'll give you that's the way back machine. That's over 10 years ago. But yeah, 161, which was not quite a decade ago, is the one I was thinking of. Yeah, and that was not a great one. So, for the record, yeah, this is not as bad as that on paper. That was not a great event in practice either, for the record. They tried so hard to sell it. It was like, boy, Roy Nelson knocks people out. Stipe Miocic knocks people out. Dan Henderson knocks people out. Rashad Evans knocks people out. There was like one finish on the main card when it was all said and done. Oh, it was so funny. Well, look, sometimes it happens. So, all I bring that up to say, like, I will not say that UFC 301 is great, but some of y'all have short memories or are recently here, and it's showing. Because I watched all of those and I covered. Did I cover both of those? I covered at least one of those. I might have covered both of them. I can't swear to 130. Covering 130. Almost positive. If I didn't cover the other one, Mark did, and he might have conned me into that one. Anyway, neither here nor there. So that's where that we'll preview next week and review, see how we're doing. And yeah, that's it for this week. Less than an hour. I am Mr. Efficiency some days, even despite my couple of dovetails. All right, couple of sidebars, but in and out pretty quickly this time. I'll take it. All right, thank y'all very, very much. Be back next week. Until then, stay safe out there and continue to be well, be safe, and behave.